This is part three of the Marketing Mastery update. And what we're going to talk about here is how to market your work in a receding economy. And obviously, right now, we have to acknowledge the fact that there is a recession. And although, you know, things seem to be getting better, we still have to deal with the fact that there is a lot of people that are buying a whole lot less. And one of the first things that people do when they want to spend less money is not buy art, right?
Definitely.
Because nobody needs a $10,000 photograph on their wall if they can't pay their mortgage, right? That's the problem. And I think it's a very serious problem. On the other hand, we have to acknowledge the fact that some people right now are still doing very well financially.
They are.
And so, you know, even though some people might not be doing so well, and even though what the media is talking about is how poorly everybody's doing, some people are doing fantastic. You know, I had, you know, customers that bought from me and are doing very, very well right now. There's people that are making a fortune also right now, depending on what they're in, you know. So, you know, we want to keep that in mind, but it's not all negative. And of course, there are people that are doing just as well now as they were before. So there is a whole gamut. And understandably, more people are doing poorly than before the recession, but that doesn't mean that all of a sudden everybody is doing lousy. The other thing that's very important is that people still need to decorate their home, you know, and offices are being built that still need artwork on their walls. The world hasn't stopped spinning, and people haven't stopped needing art just because there is a recession. And homes are being built, even though in lesser quantity, and people continue to decorate them. So there is a market. Might be a smaller market, I agree, but there is still a market. And what's important is to continue marketing your work according to what, you know, we teach on the marketing DVD, and to continue selling quality and not quantity. That's very important, because quality is allowing you to get a higher price for the work, while quantity is going to force you to discount the work. And of course, if there is less people able to afford, you know, fine art, definitely quantity is not there.
Well, they're usually looking for something unique anyway, something different.
Mm-hmm. And also, something that's very important is to not become depressed. A lot of people start to get very, very depressed because they think there is no way out of the depression. Well, the problem is if you feel depressed, you feel helpless, and all of a sudden you're no longer in control. And what we know is that in order to succeed at what we do, you have to be in control of your own destiny.
Definitely. And you have to have an organized plan that will also get you out of your depression. If you're not in control and you don't have an organized plan, you're going to be depressed. You're going to feel hopeless, you know,
right,
that, you know,
things just aren't going. And a lot of people don't have an organized plan. I went on a forum a week ago, and this photographer was saying, you know, would becoming a member of professional organizations help me reach my goal? And he wouldn't say what his goal is. So I emailed back, I say, well, if you tell me your goals, I can give you an answer. And he said, my goal is to become a professional photographer. And I said, well, in that case, becoming a member of an organization might not help a whole lot because they are not teaching, they are providing services. But what shocked me is that in his answer, he had a very long description of what he was. Right now, I'm a student, I do this, I do that. And I thought, that's all very interesting, but these are not goals.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and I think a lot of people don't really sit down and set up goals, you know, and we do. I mean, I do all the time, you know. Sometimes the goals are met faster than other times, sometimes they're met slower, but the goals are there and they eventually are reached.
Definitely. Well, I know I personally use a planner every day. I have to write down.
You like to have a list and cross it off.
I do. And man, it feels so good when I have that red
right
check mark.
Yeah.
Done!
Well, I always tell the story that I took a class in forestry, which I had a C. That was the only class I ever had a C. And the only reason why I had a C is because it was an 8 o'clock class, and I'm not really a morning person. And so I learned very little about forestry. But I learned a lot about goal planning because the teacher one day said, I'm going to spend this entire hour to teach you how to you know, set a priority list.
Yeah, right? I wish I had had that in college.
But you
that would have helped
right now, because it's very simple. What you do is you write on a piece of paper all the things you have to do, you know, the important things, the unimportant things, everything, right? Everything from changing the oil in your car to watering your plants to, you know, getting your life, right? You know,
going to work.
Right. You know, well, or writing a book.
Going to class.
Going to class or getting your degree, you know, whatever. Write it all down, you know, one long, big list. And then putting A, B, C, D in front of each of them, you know, by order of priority. That is A are the most important, B, second importance, C, third importance, and D, not all that important.
Exactly. You
know? And then the most important aspect of that is then you organize them in categories. So you group all the A, all the B, all the C together. And then the thing that really blew my mind, because at that point I thought, great, I'm going to do what I've always done, start with the easiest thing, get rewarded, and then work my way towards the more difficult things. And he said, you know, the thing you don't want to do is start with D, because by the time you're done with D and you get to C, you're a little tired, you might finish C and get to B and think, my God, I'm going to do B. And then you finish B and you look at A and you think, no way, that's too hard. He said, instead, start with A. Because those are the hard ones. They are almost impossible to achieve. But, you know, first of all, you have all your energy to work on them. And if you don't achieve them today, continue tomorrow. And don't go to B until you're done with A. And then don't go to C until you're done with B. And then finally reward yourself with D, right? D usually is, you know, getting a box of donuts or, you know, having fun at the park or something like that, you know. So that really, to me, changed my entire approach to task. Because, you know, when I set goals, my goal is to achieve the hardest things first, because I can reward myself with the easy ones.
Right. Well, I remember two things that you told me that helped me a lot. One was, like for the A ones that are more difficult to do, you know, just do a little bit every day. When you get tired, you know, just go on to the B's or the C's and then continue the next day. The other thing that you said to me years ago was use your time when you are at your best. And for me, I am at my best very early in the morning. I am not a night person. Mm-hmm. So I can get up, fix a cup of coffee, and start on those very difficult items first, and I can work for really, you know, a good 2-3 hours sometimes, you know, and then after that, you know, I may become a little tired, and then I'll have lunch, and but after lunch, I'm telling you, it's the BCs after that.
Yeah, but
know,
those are
until
easy.
The next day,
you know, and then you have the D. I mean, you know, if I have to, let's say, you know, create a new marketing campaign for my work, write a chapter for my next book, which, I mean, you know, I finished number 2, but now I'm working on number 3. And then clean my cameras. You know, in the past, before I took that class in forestry, and that was, you know, 15 years ago, I would have cleaned my cameras thinking, let's just start with that, let's get it out of the way. And then I would have been like, well, you know, maybe that's enough for the day, right? Well, now I'll start on a marketing campaign and do as much as I can. If I'm not done, I'll finish it the next day. Then I'll write the chapter and then I'll clean my cameras.
Right.
Because I know for a fact that even if I don't have time to clean my cameras and I have to go out in the field, all that matters is that the front element is clean, the lens is clean, and the camera will work. It might not be as nice cosmetically, but it's going to work fine. It's a small detail, you know, and you really want to put an order of priority. I mean, in terms of my career, you know, writing a book is going to be more noticeable, you know, by people that follow my work than whether or not I clean my camera. You know, who cares if I clean my camera? As long as it can take a great photo and not have smudges all over the place, you're fine, you know. So I think that's a very important thing, you know, today in a recession in particular, to really prioritize your goals and your task. And the reason for that is because regardless of who you are, where you are, how much money you have or don't have, we all have 24 hours in a day.
Right. Napoleon Hill also says that during difficult times, you know, to remain active, you know. And I think that's part of having an organized plan.
Right.
I was going to say organized crime.
Yeah.
An organized plan and goals, you know, that's something that you're working towards.
Right.
Because as you keep moving, you're going to work out of that depression. Yeah. You're not going to become stagnant. And depression isn't going to set in. And it's healthy. I mean,
Right.
You know, these
well,
are
you know,
very
depressed people
concepts.
Don't move. I mean, you know, if you had to take a photo of depression, you know, I don't know what anybody would do, but personally, I'd photograph somebody sitting down with their head down between their knee and sort of, you know, immobile and looking at the ground. Depressed people don't go around running, right? They don't move, you know, they are very static. And I think, you know, there is a reason for that. The minute you start moving, you start to generate, serotonin or... You know,
those endorphins?
You're right, you start to generate endorphins, and those bring positive energy and positive ideas. And so, you know, although we can say, well, it's all in the mind, it's also a little bit of body chemistry.
Yes.
You know, that as soon as you start to exercise and move around, you're starting to generate, you know, these endorphins, and it makes you feel better. You know?
And we have to be very careful as artists, because if we are depressed and we're painting or we're creating artwork, our audience is going to look at our artwork and think, yee! Boy, that's kind of a depressing scene right there, you know, and that's not good either.
Well, it's not necessarily bad. Let's just say that depressing artwork doesn't sound as well.
As happy.
As uplifting artwork. Yeah. I mean, you know,
yes.
That's right. Just the way things are.
Right.
Know?
Well, I personally would like happy colors in my house.
It's, you know, most people will not decorate their house with depressing, gloomy artwork. You know, somewhere, but it's a smaller market.
Right.
But again, if that's your band, then you have to find your target audience and you have to market to them in a way that they understand. You know, my goal is to express depression and...
Well, I remember one of the last art shows that you and I walked around, and we saw our friend Michael, who's a painter, and we have three of his oil paintings. And when I saw what was displayed, and you and I looked at each other, I said, you know, this is just a little bit too heavy for me.
It's depressing.
You know, I just, you know, I can't really, you know, deal with that right now.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to break free and walk around and check out what the other artists were doing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think depressing artwork can sell, but definitely what most people look for is something uplifting. So something to watch out. But definitely in a time of recession, you don't want to fall to depression, because it's going to get even worse. You know, you want to take matters in your own hands, set goals, and start with the A things, even if they are very, very, very hard. You know, because there's no way out. I mean, there's no other way for success. And the thing is, that's very important, is that to know is that in hard times, it's people that are at the top of their game that will remain, you know, that will survive. Right now, a lot of photographers that were sort of, you know, trying to be successful in selling their work, that may have sold a little bit, that may have thought, well, I'm going to move on from there to bigger and better. Right now, they're dying because there's not enough money going around to support everybody.
Right.
And it's those photographers that are very dedicated, that are at the top of their game, that are continuing to make it. And if you don't move from category A to category B, that is, you don't move from so-so to very serious about what you do, you're going to go too. And you have to set new goals, and you have to be more aggressive right now, you know, because otherwise things are going to go down the drain for you.
Right. I also know during this time that there are some artists that can't even afford the show fees right now.
And we pay show fees with a credit card.
Yes.
But at least they're doing shows.
Yes.
You know, I mean, you want to watch out for the expense. I mean, you don't want to have a bill that can never be paid.
Oh, I agree.
But on the other hand, you do want to expose yourself to customers. I mean, you have to sell your work. You have to find customers.
Yes. And I've also noticed that recently, it seems like more and more of the promoters are providing parking areas for artists where they can stay in their RV close to where these shows are, especially if they're for a week long or longer. You know, they may charge them a very minimal fee, but it's going to be so much cheaper than staying in a hotel that whole entire time.
And that's the right thing to do, because in a recession time, you want to cut down on your cost. Like, just like everybody else, people are saying, okay, I have financial problems, I need to spend less money. What do I do? Well, some of them cut down art. They don't buy art anymore. But as artists, and that's unfortunate, and our job is to change their minds in a way. But as artists, we have to also cut down our costs. And one of the costs are travel costs. You know, if you do a lot of shows, travel costs are very high. And by cutting down on these costs, you're going to keep more money in your pocket.
Right.
And all the money that you save is money you don't have to earn.
Right.
That is, it's another photograph you don't have to sell. That's good.
Well, some of these promoters now, what I have seen is that, you know, they're a little bit more concerned with the artists now. You know, before they were turning people away, you know, artists away, or having juried shows and, you know, you didn't make it. But now, in order to get artists to come to their shows and do their shows, they're willing to, you know, help out the artists. You know, what can we do to help keep the costs down for artists and to help them while they're doing this show? And I don't think they were really concerned about us a couple of years ago, you know, about how well we did. Or so I think there are some positive things coming out of this. I think all businesses, whether it's promoters or whatever business that you're doing, they're providing better service. And that's what I see it as.
Well, that's the key secret right there. You have to up the level of service. And the show promoters are concerned with not having any more artists doing their shows. I mean, they run a business. A show for a promoter is a business. Their income comes from the fees that the artists pay. If the artist stops selling, they'll stop coming and the promoter will go out of business. And when everything was going well, artists were selling artwork even without doing anything. Just hang it and wait.
Right.
People would buy. Now, if you hang it and wait, nothing's going to happen. You have to market your work. You have to do more salesmanship. And the show promoters know that and they're taking their part. If they didn't, they would go out of business as well.
And they're even advertising their shows more too.
Right.
Putting more money into there, getting it out more.
So that's very important, you know, and you can see what doing more marketing does. It brings more customers. There's a direct return. And that's what the show promoters are doing, and that's what the artists that are successful are doing. And that's what you have to do in order to be successful. And you have to cut down your cost. I mean, if you thought about buying a $20,000 mat cutter, this is probably not the right time. It's probably better, if you don't have one, to continue cutting by hand than to invest money in a very expensive equipment that you probably will not recoup.
Well, you're not going to be selling volume right now anyway.
And the money is better placed into doing more marketing.
It is, definitely.
And the thing that's important to understand is that what most people do when they face difficult time, most artists, most businesses, is they slow down on the marketing. They cut down on the marketing. And what you want to do is put more money into the marketing. You know, invest less in the equipment, but spend more money on the marketing. A good equipment won't do any good if you're out of business.
Right.
So the marketing is there to keep you in business, to generate new sales. You have to acquire new customers.
I think one of the other things that we should address during this recession time is when we went to go see my girlfriend, Jo, who works at the store Works by Artists.
Works of Artists.
Works of Artists.
I think
that's the name of it.
Yeah.
And she was telling you that the artists have to
get jobs.
Get a real job
a
now.
Real job. Meaning a paid job.
And you said,
not just be artist.
Exactly. And you said, well, what do you mean? You know, I mean, you were very puzzled by that.
Yeah. I was like, didn't they have a job before? I mean, I see what I do as being a profession, you know, but apparently they don't.
Yeah. So that was startling. And that was, I think, in December.
But these are people that don't market. They do shows. They just sign up for a show and then wait, you know. And we know that that's very different from marketing. Marketing means, for example, when we do a show, we're going to call our previous customers. We're going to invite them. We're going to give them a discount if they come to the show.
Definitely.
We've been at shows where, you know, there was, I don't know, 20 artists. And there was nobody in anybody's booth except in our booth.
I know, and we had a line.
We had a line, and we had the show promoter come to us. After
and say, what are you doing?
Right, after the rush was over so that they wouldn't interrupt, and come to us and look at us and say, you know, what's going on here? What are you doing? How come you have all the people and nobody else has anybody? And you had to tell them that these were people that you had invited.
Exactly.
They were not coming to the show. They were coming to our booth.
Yes.
And they had no interest in anybody else. And they were buying.
They were. We were the only ones making sales. We actually did very well that weekend, and there was a lot of artists that didn't.
Right. The other artists would complain that the show was a complete
And he would point
loss.
To us and say, well, look at them.
And we were like, you know, not a problem here, no complaints, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was always interested in how we marketed and promoted our work.
Yeah, and I think also... I think he appreciated the fact that I would never blame him for not doing his job as a show promoter, because I would make enough money to justify me being there. Because we did our own promotion.
We did.
You know? Now, it helps if the promoter does their promotion as well, which right. in their case, they didn't do a whole lot.
No.
But we were doing our own promotion. And the whole idea here is that we are taking care of our own destiny. You know, we do a show. That doesn't mean that now we are giving our destiny to the promoter. We're not putting our fate in their hands. We're continuing to take action. And I think that's the one thing. And what I think shocked me when, you know, your friend said the artists are getting real jobs, is that I thought, well, they're not taking charge of their destiny. Mm-hmm. Instead of going out and promoting their work, they just say, you know, I can't sit behind my booth and sell, so therefore I don't have a booth anymore. You know, I don't sell my work.
What do you think about the artists who have decided not to do any shows at all and just focus on creating work during this time, kind of taking a break
yeah.
and just solely creating work? What are your feelings in regards yeah. to that?
Well, only time will tell. That's what I think. The yeah. problem, and that's one of the items that I have on my list here, is what if it gets worse?
Right.
Because we don't know where this is going. I mean, you know, there is signs right now, as of April 2009, that things might be better. But really, they're signs. And sometimes, you know, markets go up and down and then do a sharp turn up or down, right? What if things get worse, right? You know, and you've taken time off thinking next year it will be better. What if it gets worse next year? You know, then now you can't afford to take more time off, right?
Right.
My personal take is take time off when things are good. You know,
right.
take time off when things are moving fine. Don't take time off when things are challenging. You know, because I think the biggest risk, besides the fact that things can get worse, is that when they come back, their chair has been taken. Their seat is gone because some other guy that's more aggressive, more driven, has taken it.
Right.
You know?
And he may find himself not being able to get back into those shows because it's going to be filled by that category or...
Yeah, you can't really expect things to remain where you left them. You know, they are going to change.
Right.
So there is a risk here. You know, if that artist that takes time off was able to see the future, then I would tell him, great. I mean, you saw the future. You know what's going to happen. You're taking time off because of that. Fantastic. I can't see the future. I don't have that ability, you know. So, and I don't think that anybody has, you know. So therefore, my recommendation is don't do it right now. Market your work harder. Because, in a sense, if you're putting together a very strong marketing effort and things get better, you're going to rock. You know, I mean, what this artist that's taking time off is not thinking is, okay, things are going to get better, I'm going to come back in the game. Yeah, but what about these artists that are already in the game? They're going to be ahead of him.
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't think that's a good idea. My take is take time off when things are going well.
Right.
You know, or take time off every year at the same time. You know, make it a routine. But don't take time off because things are not going well.
Right. Yeah. Well, I know in marketing yeah. it's very important for you to let the customer know that you're still there, you know, reminding them of you. And I think mm-hmm. getting out and selling your work, I think that's very important, that they see you regularly and that they see your work regularly and that in your work should be changing and growing at the same time.
And it depends what your goals are. You know,
right.
I mean, if your goals are to make no money this year, then I think that will achieve the goal. But if your goal is to make a lot of money this year, then that's not going to achieve the goal. And so that's always a matter of goal. What are your goals, you know? And what are your needs? I mean, what's your lifestyle?
Right.
You know? Can you afford to not make any money? You know, I don't know.
What
I don't,
is
I
your
can't,
plan?
Right? Yeah, what's your plan, you know?
Okay.
Something that's also very important is to not lower your prices too much, right? And because a lot of artists think, well, things are going bad. What I'm going to do is I'm going to offer my work for a whole lot less. And we've seen artists slash their work prices by more than 50%. I mean, sometimes by 60% or more. I mean, and some of them basically look at the customer and say, make me an offer, I'll take whatever, you know. I mean, the problem with that is, does it work? Well, not always. That's one of the problems.
Exactly.
And when it works, you might feel very, very cheated, you know. And then the other problem is, what if it gets worse? What if you slash your prices by one half, 50% off, and then tomorrow the recession gets worse? What do? Slash by another half? Now you're making 25% of what you used to make.
But how do you deal with the customers who have paid 50% more?
That's right.
And that come by and now see it 50% less? I mean,
Well, the way you deal with them is you don't deal with them. They're gone. They're like, I'm sorry, but, you know, I don't like this. I'm gone. And we know for a fact that your most important customers are your previous customers.
Exactly.
If you tick them off, I think right now you can basically write your business off. Right. You want to keep them. And so my recommendation is to offer more service as opposed to lowering your price beyond any reasonable amount.
Well, I think you were going to talk about that one artist who all of a sudden has decided after selling his work very inexpensive that now all of a sudden...
Right. Yeah, we see the opposite, which is artists that sold their work for hardly anything. I mean, this artist sold 40 by 50s for $200.
You
know, these are on canvas, you know, inkjet prints, photographs, $200, and was obviously relying on volume. But we're talking massive amount of volume. And all of a sudden, that's gone. We know for a fact volume is over. And what he's decided to do is triple his prices.
Right.
But I mean, there's a big difference between able to afford $200 and being able to afford $600.
Right. But also putting on his website that, you know, that
it's over.
Yeah, it's over, and please do not call us and ask us for a better price or something over
the
phone.
That's a huge mistake.
And
that's
that,
a huge
you know,
mistake.
This is just the way it's going to be from now on. I mean, it was actually quite shocking to read that on the website.
It's a huge
website.
Mistake, because on the one hand, people that have paid $200 will not pay more during a recession. That's obvious. Nobody will pay more for the same thing during a recession. People may not expect you to drop your prices by one half.
Well, that's the thing. The work hasn't changed. It's the same work.
Right. So people might not expect you to drop your prices beyond belief, but they are not going to accept to pay more. They want something more than they got before. And it can be a lower price, or it can be a higher level of service, or it can be added value.
Right.
It can be one of these three things.
Right.
But they expect more. They don't expect higher prices and nothing else. You know, and so that's the first thing. The second thing is that his work hasn't changed, and his work looks cheap.
Yes.
But it looks fine at the level of price that he was asking before. At this new level of price, it looks like he's ripping off the customer.
Right.
Because it looks cheap. It's very quickly made. It's done in a very gaudy fashion. There's no refinement of printing. It's really in your face. And, you know, at a low price, we're like, okay, I'll live with that. But at a high price, we're like, for that money, I can get way better than that. And why shouldn't I? You know, because what happens in a recession is people look more carefully at the purchases that we make.
Right.
Instead of saying, you know, all right, I'll take that. You know, I'm curious. I'll try it. And they don't think about it any further. But in a recession, they think about each purchase very, very carefully. And my guess is that he's made an enormous mistake.
Mm-hmm.
You know. The other thing that is very important is pricing your time. And I have this on this list here. A lot of artists don't price their time and basically count their time as free. You know, when people say, how much does it cost you to do that? They add the ink, the paper, and whatever, other supplies, and then that's the price. Well, the price is also, and in very large part in fine art, your time.
Well, and as an artist, if you're doing shows, you need to count your driving time. You need to count your setup time. You need to count the hours that you are physically there sitting at the show because you obviously can't be producing work because you're sitting there. Counting the time to take down the show, time for packing the show. You know, you have to pack everything. What are your meal costs? Mm-hmm. What are your show costs? What are your hotel expenses? What are your gas expenses? All of this, you need to pay yourself. When you go home and you're shipping packages, you need to be paying yourself for your time, not only for your time, but also the money needs to cover all of the shipping materials.
Right. Yeah. And obviously, that's something that should be done when you start your business. But if you haven't done it, this is definitely something you should do right now.
Definitely.
And it's explained on the DVD. There's a whole section on that. But I wanted to touch up on it. And, you know, very, very important to have a good price on your time. You don't want to price yourself at minimum wage because you are doing a very sophisticated, a job that needs a lot of training. Okay?
Definitely. I mean, it's less work to work for another business at minimum wage than to do it, mm-hmm. you know, be in business yourself, because you're going to be putting in so many more hours.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if I was making minimum wage, I'd go get a job at McDonald's.
I used to tell my students that when I was teaching art, I would tell them, you know,
it's not worth it.
I would say, you know, if you want to be an artist and you want to sell your work, you're going to be working 14, 15-hour days, 12-hour days regularly. Yeah. I said, if you want it easy, go get an 8-to-5 job. Sure. When you go home, you don't have to think about the job. You could just, you know.
Yeah, and a lot of people say, well, I may not make much, but I do something I love. Well, yeah, that's fine for maybe 2-3 years, but not for 12, 15, 20 years.
Exactly.
All of a sudden, after a while, you're like, you know, I do something I love, but I'd like to make an amount of money that allows me to have the lifestyle that I want also.
Yes.
Because a lot of people don't think about that. They just think, do what you love, which is very important. And I strongly recommend, and I always say to people, do what you love. But do what you love in order to achieve the lifestyle that you love. That's the whole thing. You know, if the lifestyle is not there and you have to live in miserable conditions, be basically in a state that's not what you want, then something's wrong, you know. And probably what's wrong is you're not charging enough, you know. And obviously right now is not the best time to raise your prices, but prices do have to go up regularly. And in a recession, we may not want to raise our prices as much as if the business was working fine, but we still need to raise them. The post office is increasing its prices. We have to charge
all the time.
And so that expense must be passed on. We can't all of a sudden think that because we sell art, we no longer belong to the larger economy.
Right.
You know, we have to continue that.
And I think if you're raising it 10% at a time, it's not that noticeable.
No. We just raise our shipping prices on print. It's important. Yeah. It has to be done. You know, it might be more painful because the recession is there, but that still has to be done. In other words, just because it's a recession doesn't mean that you can't increase your prices at all. You certainly don't want to double your prices, but you have to account for the increase in the cost of life. Otherwise, you're going to find yourself on the other side of the recession having to make now an enormous increase in price. And that's probably going to cost you business more than if you made a small adjustment right now. So these are quite a few things that we covered here in this little update on what to do during the recession. And I think that the most important is to offer a higher level of service and a higher level of value also.
Oh, definitely.
That definitely, you know, artists that just wanted to sell something, put it in a bag, sometimes they don't even give you a bag and say, have a nice day, are definitely the ones that are going to go out of business. We want to offer a higher level of value and service. You want to treat your customers better, you know, or as well as you did before. But you definitely want to treat them well.
Well, you should always treat your customers well.
But it's not always the case.
Oh, I agree.
And if it's not the case, it definitely has to be the case. And if you can think of ways that you can go further, then that's the right time also.
Right, definitely.
Because those are really, you know, we always say that, you know, all our money is in the hands of other people.
Right.
You know, and those other people are our customers. And if we don't have customers, then we don't have any money.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, marketing is basically the act of transferring that money from one pocket to another, you know.
Right.
And so it has, and people don't let go of it just by, you know, some twist of fate, you know, but some miracle. They do because they are willing to, you know.
Right.
There has to be value. That's what's driving people to buy right now is value. And also the thing to not forget is that this is a buyer's market. And they say that about real estate, but I think we can say it for all things. It's a buyer's market, whether it's cars, whether it's clothes, and whether it's artwork, you know.
Right. I think now one of a great thing to do when you're doing a show is, and if you see a customer that has bought from you before, but you see them at the show, maybe you've invited them to show, maybe they didn't buy from you, you know, but just sending them an email afterwards and just saying, you know, it was so great to see you again on Saturday. Just writing something just really short and nice, you know, just adding a little bit of a personal touch to it. I think it doesn't take a lot of time. And right. I think it's, you know, something that you can do beyond maybe what you did before.
And maybe since you have maybe more time, then you can do that extra thing. Instead of taking time off to create art and then come back and see if it's better, maybe, you know, taking more time to give to your customers is the proper thing to do.
Yes.
I mean, I think definitely, personally, I think that's the better thing to do. You know, you can always take time off later when things are going well, but right now, you want to defend and protect your business. You know?
If you were offering a special offer, maybe in that email you could end by saying, you know, that your 20%, you know, special offer is good for maybe one more week. Mm-hmm. You know, give them another week. Mm-hmm. Maybe they saw a piece and
well, or add value. I mean, it's not just about dropping the price, which as I said, is not always the best idea.
Right.
It's also offering more for that price. You know, offering free framing if you have a matted piece, for example. You know, it doesn't cost us all that much to frame a piece. And sometimes, when we negotiate, we know that it's better to give away a piece of work for free rather than drop the price.
Oh, definitely.
You know, if somebody comes to you and says, well, let's say I buy 5 pieces, what's the best price you can do? The very best answer you can give is say, you know what? I'll give you the 6th piece, number 6, for free.
Definitely.
You pay for 5 and I give you number 6 for free. And if each of these pieces is $500, you're giving $500 away for free. But to you, the difference is only the cost of manufacturing that piece, of making that piece, which could be, you know, $50 or $100.
Right.
You know, so you save $400. If you discount the price by $500, you lose $500. But if you give a piece away for free, the customer gets the same value, but it only costs you $100. So a very powerful way of adding value is to offer free framing, for example. You know, maybe starting at a certain size, probably not worth doing it on 8x10s, you know. But if you buy a 16 by 20 or 20 by 30, I'll throw in the framing. It's a very high value because the customer will have to take that piece and take it to a frame shop and possibly spend as much money on the framing as on the artwork.
Well, I think that works very well if you have a stock of frames at home.
That you don't know what to do with.
Exactly. Sure. And I know that I personally, right after Christmas, Aaron Brothers, which aren't, you know, I don't think they have a store in every state, but you buy a frame, you get the second one for a penny. Mm-hmm. That is the perfect time to be stocking up on your frames. And then, like you said, if you offer to frame it a piece for them for free, well, that frame, you know, is now 50% less because, you know.
Or you could do the same as Aaron Brothers, because after all, they are marketing like we are.
Oh, they
buy
are.
A piece of work and the second one for a penny, you know.
Right.
Because it doesn't cost, if you sell your work, let's say a piece for $300, and somebody buys one for $300, and then you give a second one for a penny, it did not cost you $300 to make that other piece. It may have cost you $50.
Right.
I mean, we know that in art, the price that you sell has nothing to do with the price that you pay for the material.
Right.
The value is really in your time and in your talent and in your leverage, in your name and all of that. I mean, you know, photographed by Ansel Adams that sell for $100,000 costs a few dollars to create, you know, paper and matting and some chemicals. So you really are not in for a whole lot of money. And now you can say, well, I don't really feel like giving my work away for free. Well, you're not giving it away, because the reason why somebody is buying is because they're going to get 2 for 1, basically.
Right.
They would not buy at all otherwise. So you have to think not in terms of giving something away, but in terms of generating sales that would not be generated otherwise. Okay, that's way better than dropping the price 50%. If you drop the price 50% on a 16 by 20, now you make at $300, always the same price, you would make $150 instead of $300. If you give 2 for 1, which is basically what Aaron Brothers is doing, you're making $300.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're making $150 more.
Well, they make more than that, because when they have those sales, I'm putting large orders in for frames.
You're buying 50 at a time, 100 at a time.
100 at a time. And they do that with their canvases too.
Mm-hmm.
Buy one canvas, get one for a penny.
But the same applies to them. If they give a 50% off sale, you know, they don't make as much as if they give the second frame for a penny.
Mm-hmm.
It is the same to you as a customer. And that's why we go for it. But it's not the same to them as the merchant.
Right.
Because they only pay the wholesale price on these frames.
Right.
You know, and there's no telling what they pay. I mean, you know, and it's none of our business. So it's always better as a merchant to offer something along the lines of get the second one for a penny or get the second one for so much, as opposed to reducing the price of the first one by half.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, because you make more money. And that's the whole idea. So you have to offer more value. It doesn't matter in what shape, you know. It can be value in terms of free delivery. It can be free shipping. You know, it can be...
Well, if they're local, just driving it to their house. A large piece.
Exactly. Home consultation.
Offering it to hang it
right.
for them. Or if there's a piece that they're interested in, just offering it to bring it and to, you know, show them what it's going to look like in their home.
Yeah.
Whether it goes with their decor.
Right. Which is a home consultation,
yes.
Free, you know, free home consultation. Well,
right.
Yeah, it's free, but guess what? People are not going to consult for an 8x10. They're going to consult for, you know, very large pieces that are really, you know, difficult decisions, thousands of dollars.
Ethan Allen, perfect example.
Right.
Ethan Allen Furniture Store had free consultation. They came to our house. We had a free interior design consultation. What ended up happening? We bought more furniture.
The free consultation, yeah.
It worked very well.
Right. For them, yeah. And for
yes.
us. But the fact is that on our side, the free consultation cost us thousands of dollars. I mean, literally, you know, we went back and we bought right away $3,000. And then we went back and bought another $3,000. I mean, so it's free, but then, you know, really it's to their benefit. But it works. And it works because ourselves, but everybody loves personalized attention.
Right.
And we love the fact that when they were here, and this is, I think, what made us buy, even though we understand marketing and we know that this offer is really a marketing offer, the clincher for us was that when they were here, they did not overdo it.
No. No. And they were also looking at the furniture that we had and giving us ways that we could incorporate it and use what we had. So they weren't suggesting that we buy everything new and just throw out what, you know,
didn't because
work.
If they had come here and said, you know what, you have to redo your entire living room, it's all horrible, and you have to take out all of this, I would have said to them, I said, you know, let me think about it, which means, sorry, but I can't do that. Instead of that, they were like, okay, this works, that works, but, you know, and they pointed out two things that were obvious. The kitchen table, I mean, we have a kitchen that's, 500 square feet? I mean, I have no idea.
I don't know.
Probably about 500 square feet. And we had a table that was 2 feet by 2 feet.
Something like that. A little breakfast table with two chairs underneath a chandelier.
So let's say that the table was 4 square feet in a 500 square feet kitchen, and we had two chairs around the table, right? And we thought nothing of it because it's just you and I, and it worked. You know, I mean, it was a little cramped, but, you know, it worked. And they came here and they looked at it, and they did not make fun of it. They did not break out in laughter and say, my God, what is this? You know, they were very polite. And they said, you know, you need a larger table for your kitchen. And we were like, oh, really? Why? And they say, well, you know, look at how disproportionate the counter. We have a 10-foot-long kitchen counter.
Right.
We have a granite counter, which is actually a double counter. It's 10 foot long. And we had this 4-square-foot table, 2 feet wide, in front of it.
Underneath the chandelier.
And we had
that people keep bumping their head on.
We had to center it right under the chandelier because that was the way to shelter the visitors from hitting their head. And they said, look, it just doesn't work. And so...
They brought out the tape, the
They brought out
tape.
The tape, and they measured,
this
and they said...
This is the length that you need.
This is what you need. And then they showed us the catalog and said, this one. And we actually agreed. Because
we
they
did.
Picked. And then the thing is that they did not pick the most expensive table.
Nope. And they also picked what would go with our decor.
Right. They picked the one that would work with the decor. Because one of the things we are doing is there's a lot of wood in the house, and all the wood matches in color and in texture and the pattern and all of that. And they picked one that matched perfectly. And I was sold out on it the minute they said, do this. I was like, that's it. This is the answer. I just did not know.
Right.
You know, I mean, we had to make so many changes. We you know, it passed over our heads.
I learned a lot from that consultation that they did. Even the realization that we were hanging some of our artwork too high.
Too high, yeah. A lot of things. But to go back to the table, I think, you know, in terms of how that can be used by photographers who would do home consultations, the thing to learn from it is that if you go to a home consultation, like you make an appointment with a customer, let's say you do a show, and a customer comes around, and you talk to them, and they say, you know, I really like your work, but I'm not sure what size would work or even what photograph would work in my home. And you tell them, you say, well, listen, what I can do, and there's no charge, is do a home consultation. It will be free. Just give me your address. Let's find a time that's convenient for both you and I. I'll go to your house. I'll bring the different pieces that you're interested in, different photographs and different sizes. Then we'll hang them where you want to hang them, and we'll see which one works the best. You know, that's how you do it. But the thing to keep in mind is your goal is not to sell the biggest piece
exactly.
and the most expensive piece that you have.
Exactly.
Because if you try this, you're going to fall flat on your face. You will make the mistake that you cannot recover from. Your goal is to find the piece that will work the best for the customer.
And it's probably going to be medium size, pretty much.
Well, it doesn't matter. It can be anything. But you're right. Most of the time, it's probably going to be middle of the road. But if it happens to be a piece that's not the most expensive that you have, that's fine, because your goal is to make a sale, not to sell the most expensive thing that you have.
Exactly.
And I think that's what worked with Ethan Allen. They recommended something that was, you know, properly priced. You know, it wasn't the most expensive thing that we had. It worked for us.
Yes.
You know, and obviously our style is not a style that would be the highest price that we have. You know, we don't want gold plated furniture. You know, we have a more eclectic collection. We have a more, you know, a different style, you know, than that. And I think they were able to find out what we like and sell us what we want. You know, and that's what matters. And that's what you have to do if you do, you know, home consulting. You have to find out what it is that people want. Look at their decor, look at their furniture, look at the other artwork that they have. Find something that works with it.
Also the frames.
And the
frames have got to work with it,
if too. If it's framed, you know, it might not be framed. It might be a wrap canvas, or it might be a dry-mounted piece. Who knows? But whatever you have, it has to work.
Right. And if you don't have the frame, you can offer or suggest a frame.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, run down to Aaron Brothers and get one.
Well, or have some molding with you. But the thing that's very important is that if you do a home consulting and you bring the artwork and you know exactly what's going to work and you put it where the customer wants it and the customer is like, oh my God, this is exactly what I want. I love it. How can they not buy? You know, if your price is properly, you know, priced, if you have an adequate pricing, not too low and not too high, it's sold. It's
right.
in their home, they have the solution to their problem, it looks fantastic, they're going to buy it.
Right.
You know, all you have to do is take their credit card number and run it and you're done. And you've delivered it and they love you and you can give them 10% for the next purchase and off you go. I mean, you probably have a customer for life, you know. So there's an enormous amount that you can do with increasing, you know, the value of what you're selling, you know, and the service. Especially if you have more time. If you have more time because there are less sales, instead of sitting on your hands and being all depressed, offer more service to the customer.
Right. I agree.
So we've seen quite a few things that I think customers can appreciate on the part of an artist in business. And we've seen quite a few things that artists can do, you know, to sell their work better. And definitely these are things that you should consider right now because of the recession to increase your sales, you know, and to provide a service that other artists may not be offering. You know, instead of being depressed and waiting for things to get better, I think that it's very important to be active, to take action now and to do, you know, some of the things that we suggest because they've been tested. I mean, we've seen other artists do this. We've seen other businesses do it and we've been on the receiving end of it and they work.